when you open the door for somebody else.
Welcome in, everyone, to the vaccine conversation with Melissa and Dr. Bob.
I seriously want to go to medical school just so I can have a doctor in front of my name. But then I'll be so deep into student loans that it just won't make sense.
And that'll be four years of your life you'll never get back.
So. That is true. And 4 hours on vaccine education in those 4 years.
That's four more hours than most people get.
That is absolutely true.
But I digress.
You always do. So welcome back to the episode that we are going to talk about today, guys, and to our podcast season two. We have been asked, specifically I have been asked for this episode, and so we're going to do it because you guys ask and we listen. And this topic is about kind of where do you start? So when you meet somebody that wants to know why you are in this movement and wants to know some more information, where do you start? And also, second part to that, if you have a friend, colleague, family member who's having a baby or maybe is having another child and is seen some things you've been posting or talking about and wants to know where to start researching. So kind of what would we advise or what would we our go-tos? To provide information for those two circumstances and kind of what do we talk about to give you guys some tips on what you can be using for yourselves and in your lives. So I think this is a good idea. We should have done this kind of maybe a while ago.
Yeah. And it's not like, the 10 most important facts that you're going to win a vaccine debate with, or like, the five most important aspects of, why vaccines have risk, right? It's not like that. It's basically just the top, fairly simple ideas that are conversation pieces and just the normal day-to-day conversations you might have. Again, like you said, you're probably in someone who has asked you about it, not so much like you can just go up to someone and then say, hey, here's the five things about vaccines you need to know. But it's someone you kind of already know, you're already friends or familiar with them. And they are, again, they're going to have kids or they are asking you about, why do you believe, what you believe? Tell me about it. So it's kind of someone who's kind of already thinking about this issue and they want to know more, what are just the basic points that you can start giving them to think about that's going to then lead them down the road of research so that they can expand their knowledge base.
And sometimes this is like, again, talking about somebody who wants to research vaccines. Mm-hmm. And then this is about somebody who wants to know why you're involved in vaccines, which are two very different conversations that you would be having.
Yeah.
Let's start with top five, kind of maybe the top five points that you'd start. I'm going to go first just because I think mine are probably a little more vague than yours because I tend to think more in generalities and you go a little bit more niche. That's my guess. We have not seen each other's top five.
I know. We prepared these little lists and see how they compare.
Don't look at my list, Dr. Bob. Okay. So if I was at a rally or a demonstration and somebody came up and talked to me and was like, why are you guys doing this? Or if I'm in an Uber on the way to the airport to go to Sacramento, to the Capitol, and somebody's asking me, what are you taking your trip for? You're involved in this. What's why? This topic is so expansive and there are so many subtopics under the umbrella of the vaccine debate.
Right.
And there are too many subtopics to really go into with somebody. And I think the problem, I was just talking about this the other day. I think the problem is that people overwhelm people. Mm-hmm. People in our movement overwhelm others with information. Let me send you these 40 studies on aluminum. Let me send you these 200 studies all in one Google Drive about how vaccines are connected to autism. Let me show you this thing on corruption. Let me show you this thing on the laws. Let me show you on the 1986 Act. It's like there is so much information. I mean, I can hardly keep up in 5-6 years of heavy, hardcore researching. So when you're having, what some people say, your elevator pitch, when you're having a basic discussion on this issue, where do you start and how deep do you go into something and how many of these topics do you really cover? So I've been having this conversation for six years in different ways. I've had it with media. I've had it with legislators. I've had it with lay people. I've had it with other parents of, you know, injured kids. I've had it with family members. I've had it with strangers, random strangers. So each of the, I will say that each of these things is a different conversation. Each of these, each of the angles that you're going to go into with somebody are going to be different based on the person and based on the what they are interested in, what they respond to. There are a couple things, though, that I feel like have been the most effective, impactful, and successful points that I've that I bring up that I see resonate with people. And this is what I'm going to give you as my top five. So my top five is this. If you're taking notes, this is a good time. Dr. Bob's taking notes. Look at you.
What
yeah, right.
Melissa gonna say?
You're like topic number one. Okay, so the first thing that I tend to mention with people is how our vaccine schedule has increased. I talk about how there are 69 doses on today's schedule. And yes, that number is 69. So I talked about this recently on a post on Facebook. We go into the details on why it's 69 doses. It's not 72. It's not 74. I do not count in pregnancy doses, though, you know, many would think indirectly that that can affect the child, which I agree. But as far as what the childhood schedule is for the CDC, it is 69 doses for the 2020 schedule. But when you tell someone that a vaccine schedule is almost 70 doses now, every single time I have been met with shock and discomfort.
Okay.
I've never had somebody go, well, I'm not too worried about that. I think that's fine. And, you know, I've heard some dissenters say people are going to just think, well, cool, that's more things that you're protected from. But I have personally never encountered that in all the walks of life that I've come across and all the different people I've come across. I've never found somebody who was okay or comfortable with the fact that we have 69 doses on the schedule.
Good.
I get people saying, I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I had people saying, why so many? I had people saying, well, that's kind of a problem, or that's a little uncomfortable. So the first thing I talk about is the schedule. I say how it's tripled since we were kids. So in just one generation, you've seen this massive increase. And you're saying from parent to child, there's been a massive increase. And most of the time when you're talking to somebody, you know, over 50, you're saying, you know, you got a handful of shots, you got a few. And now they're getting 50 injections. So don't be confused by the doses, you guys, when you hear people talk about, well, they say doses, you know, have less antigens now than before. And that's an argument. We can probably do an entire podcast on that. But there are 50 injections on today's schedule. And in the 80s, there were seven. So even that alone has increased eight times, you know, basically a little over eight times, eightfold increase in the number of injections. That is not something anybody can really argue in favor of, because that's just not something that, I mean, again, we have so many viruses and bacteria that we do not vaccinate for. And there are many things our body needs to be strong for. So it's not like you can say, well, you're covering everything, because you're not covering everything. You're just covering the handful of things that they make vaccines for that somebody's patented and that they've gotten the ACIP to put on the schedule. That doesn't mean those are the most dangerous things that you'll ever come across. And it doesn't mean every single thing we vaccinate for is fatal or potentially even dangerous. It's just whatever the ACIP has decided has gone on the childhood schedule. So there are a lot of other things that have risk and pose risk to everyone, which is why your body needs to be strong all the time. So saying I have 69 doses of this and somehow that's, I'm totally covered for everything. You're not. You're not totally covered for everything. And it doesn't necessarily make you healthier by having all of those doses. This is a discussion I think most rational people, when they have understand there are too many too soon. That was discussed in the presidential primaries, I remember. Too many too soon.
Yeah.
There were three or four different candidates in the Republican primary that discussed, one being a neurosurgeon, right? Talking about too many too soon, that there is a way to reduce the schedule and to not give as many at these young ages. So that's something I think most people could all get behind, which is why it's so important to have choice and to have exemptions so that you can customize what you feel is important and at what age you feel comfortable giving that to your child. So the schedule increasing is the first thing, and that's why the first thing I put on my volume one of Vax Facts is the schedule. And on the back of that postcard, you can see it all listed out by dose. So that if somebody doesn't believe you, you can see it written out exactly as is. And this is based on the CDC schedule directly. So that's my first one.
Okay.
My second one is the concept that, like I mentioned in a previous episode, all pharmaceutical products have side effects for some. This is a huge one for me that really resonates with people. You could say to anybody, I'm sure you'd agree, that all drugs or pharmaceutical products have side effects for some. There is risk for some to any pharmaceutical product or any drug. Anything manufactured by a pharmaceutical company has a risk for somebody.
Right, because that's something the listener can agree with. Like everyone's
everybody
agree
can agree with that. And that's just reminding people, oh yeah, guess what? Vaccines are a pharmaceutical product. Right. They are not in a category by themselves, even though they're in a category of biologics. They're not in a category right. apart from risk and side effects. They're just like everything else. So you have to bring that back into the category where they are, which is a pharmaceutical product. So that's my second one. Vaccines have risks for some, period, guaranteed. Guaranteed, there are children that will be injured by vaccines every single year, period, end of story. Knowing that, how can we mandate something? So that's kind of where it leads you into that point. How can you mandate anything that has inherent risk? A third point, which everybody probably already knows I'm going to this, is that there is no liability. The fact that there is no liability for a company does not give them incentive to make them safer or better or more effective or change the formulas and change the way that they're combining things to make it easier for bodies to detoxify. The fact that there is no liability, and this is the only product for children that has no liability, should be worrisome for everybody, because everybody understands that, you know, a food, a lotion, a tool that you're using, there can be injuries from all sorts of things. And this is the system of checks and balances, is being able to sue that company and be able to make them accountable for something like this. When you cannot make a company accountable and you cannot hold them liable for an injury or death to your child, that should really be a cause of concern and a red flag for everybody. What would make that liability be removed? And why was that the case? And of course, what has happened since that point? And, you know, vaccine court is not necessarily something I would go into on a first basic conversation with somebody, because I think it's hard for them to understand. If they are really interested in the no liability point, and this is kind of the key, is that you see what makes sense to somebody and you can follow it up. If they're really interested in no liability, then you can say, actually, yeah, liability was removed and they created a federal court for you to sue. And in fact, they've already, you know, paid out over $4 billion to injuries, you know, injured families and children over that time.
And I think if you have the time, you know, in this conversation to throw that in, I think that number is very impressive, and
it is,
and it
but
really
it
hits
it,
people.
To me, it just it covers a whole other aspect that people are kind of like, wait, what?
Well, like you keep it simple. There's no liability, you know, because there's no liability. Like the government has a fund, so when someone is injured, they pay him from this fund, and they've paid out over $4 billion in that fund. So I think it's I like to tie that into the liability issue.
Don't be mentioning your top five ahead of time.
Well, actually,
by the way.
So that's not one of my five. So okay. I'm jumping in on yours. I like, if you're going to talk about the fact that there's no liability, again, I think if you have a really quick one sentence way to throw in that $4 billion number, I think that adds so much more information to the fact that the vaccines have risk, as evidenced by this payout.
So to me, it'd be like
it adds more concern.
It'd be a follow-up question or a follow-up conversation maybe is going into that next level. Because just no liability, I think for most people, is still enough for them to
it
feel
is.
Like,
yeah.
whoa.
Yeah.
But yes, that is tied into that too. The next thing I would say is I would talk a little bit about individualized medicine and one size doesn't fit all and genetic susceptibility and family medical history, something to do with the idea, well, you know, everybody's body's different. And now they're finding that there are kids and adults with genetic susceptibility to having injuries and to having, you know, reactions to certain medications. And new research is showing that some kids are at risk of certain things while others are not. And they're just kind of getting to the point where they're discussing this now. So we know that this kind of thing, medicine should be individualized. It should not be universally recommended for that reason. Because, you know, your body responds to your blood pressure medication differently than my body would.
Right.
And having that discussion, people are very, very comfortable with the idea that everybody's body is unique and responds differently to foods and medications. So that uniqueness in medicine, I think, is important to understand. And then the fifth thing I would say is I would say something that ties into why mandates are wrong. And so, like I mentioned before, knowing there's something with inherent risk makes it hard to be passing these laws that are mandating and discriminating against kids, not allowing them an education, because if everybody's body's individual and they react differently to a medication, and now they're being kicked out of school because their body reacted that way, that doesn't seem ethical or fair. I would also tie in the fact that there's such a small number of children asking for exemptions, and there's such a small number of kids that are unvaccinated, because the way the media makes it is like that number's skyrocketing. So I like to throw in, well, you know, there's only about 1% of kids are unvaccinated. So it's a really small amount. It doesn't take away from herd immunity levels that they are asking to be. And that's a piece of data that I think somebody could always remember and take with them in future conversations. Like, really, you think like half of the kids are unvaccinated? Actually, I heard that's really only 1%, because that's a very important statistic, I think, to know. That maybe in some class of 20, you know, four kids in that class of 20 is now, you know, all of a sudden 20% of that class is unvaccinated. But that's not realistic. And in real numbers, we're looking at about 1%. And that number has stayed consistent for so long. So that number is not just hugely increasing. And it's important to know that number so that when we're talking about passing laws for 1% of kids, or passing laws for the 3-4% that are using religious exemptions, and knowing some of those kids are injured, it's like, that makes this discussion about mandates, you know, really a discussion about ethics. And that's something I think most people can agree upon too. So I know that has a couple sub points in there, but I like to discuss mandates. You know, I just explained to you the schedules increase. We know vaccines have risk for some. These companies have no liability. Everybody's body's unique. How can we be passing mandates that are going to be discriminating against kids that have reactions? You know, like, it kind of all ties into the same thing. And it's relatively general. And it's more like, you can agree with me that this, and right, you also right. understand this. And I right. bet you have seen this happen maybe in your own family, that you had a certain medication that didn't work with you. And you're just getting people to understand that vaccines are in the same boat as every other medication. And if we can agree that pharmaceutical companies are aggressively advertising and marketing and profiting on medications, and they're the ones making vaccines, then maybe this schedule increasing and mandates popping up across the country will start to make sense to people in a different way. Of course, there are so many other things that you could talk about. But for me, these are kind of the things I tend to hit in really small points, maybe one sentence on that. And if they want to know more, they're welcome to come and ask me for more or follow up or whatever. And you want people to be agreeing with you so that they understand you're just like me. We're not that different. And I think that's a really important thing, is to come together and go, hey, you're concerned with your kids. I'm concerned with my kids. This is kind of what happened. And did you know that this? Yeah. And if they're like, yeah, I'd be in the same boat, then you're like, you can leave that conversation feeling like, that wasn't so bad. That wasn't so hard, and maybe that person's thinking differently about it. And that's really what you're asking for people. You're not asking them to be on board and be on fire. You're asking them just to understand, like I've said before, why we exist. So right. those are my top
yeah.
five.
Yeah, and you want to, if it's someone that you're probably going to see again, and this isn't just like a one-time conversation at a rally or something, but somebody you're going to see again, you really want to end that conversation with that person wanting to talk to you again
right.
and find out more. So I think it's really important to kind of come away from it having looked credible to that person, having looked intelligent to that person. Some of mine overlaps with yours, but one thing I want to ask you about one of your points, and I want to, maybe we can break this down a little bit, is I've always been curious about the idea that, let's say, just, you know, 1% of people are not vaccinating and have exemptions. That's such a small number, so they don't have to worry about it. I'm kind of curious from a perception standpoint. We know we have data that show that, you know, that it's about 1% have the exemption. But a lot of us, I think, suspect that the percentage of people that are not vaccinating is probably much higher than that. And maybe they're not enrolled in school. They don't have a school exemption. And
I don't think so.
The reason I ask is from someone's perception who hasn't really thought much about this and they're just trying to find out more.
Right.
Would they find the fact that the number of families that are now questioning vaccines has tripled in the last few years. There's now, you know, three times as many families questioning, you know, are vaccines safe and are they necessary than before. You know, more and more people are now starting to question it. And, you know, we don't know how many, you know, completely nationwide for sure are not vaccinating, but I feel like it's a higher number than the CDC says it is. I think the CDC doesn't want the public to know how many people, and I'm just guessing. I mean, my point would be, if someone's trying to figure out if this vaccine issue is worth looking at and worth questioning and worth maybe joining the crowd that's questioning it, wouldn't they rather that crowd be a large crowd versus a small crowd? And if there's only this tiny little minority who's not vaccinating and they're kind of over there, maybe we should do something about those people because they're only a tiny little, you know, little group of our country. But gosh, if 5% of America is questioning vaccines, why is it so many? And maybe I should start questioning it as well. And the reason I ask this is that the data we looked at from those studies a couple months ago showed the number of people that feel that vaccines might have risk, and then that vaccines, we're doing more vaccines than we should, too many too soon, and some are unnecessary. That was like, you know, 30% of people or 40 or 50% of people had at least some questions about vaccines. And wouldn't that make someone kind of join this cause more if they knew it was a large group versus a tiny group trying to sort of pretend like, oh, you don't have to worry about the number of people that don't vaccinate because it's so small. You see what I'm asking and where I'm going
with
this, and
but
I don't know the right answer.
So I got your back. Okay. Yeah. Right. So to that point, a couple things. One, that 1% rate is pulled from 19 to 35 months old. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not pulled at what school rates are and stuff. In fact, what they suggest is there are even less by the time it's kinder that are unvaccinated. And we're talking about completely unvaccinated,
right,
not partially
right,
vaccinated.
Right.
So the number of parents questioning things, the number of children whose families are questioning things is a much higher number because
right,
those are who are partially vaccinated or vaccine injured. We're talking about who are completely unvaccinated.
Right. Right.
But
yeah,
the way the media portrays it is that the unvaccinated kids are growing in this huge amount and they're causing risk and potential disease transmission.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to show is that that amount is so small, they couldn't possibly do anything to herd immunity. Now, the number of people that are questioning vaccines is much higher than that. And yes, it is. Why? Because most people selectively vaccinate. And that is the truth. Most people selectively vaccinate.
Right.
And that is the majority of America selectively vaccinates. They may skip a year, they don't get their flu shot. They may opt out of HPV for their child. They may not do the hepatitis B series. They might have not done a booster one of the times. People are selectively vaccinating as the majority. And that's something
right,
that you could say to somebody
right,
to show the majority of America understands we need vaccine choice.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So that's to that point. Yeah. That has nothing to do with the 1% statistic. The 1%
yeah,
is not saying only 1% of families are worried about vaccine safety. We're saying only 1% are completely unvaccinated
right,
at toddler age, and the rest, people that are partially vaccinated or opting out of some doses or customizing their schedule, is the majority of America.
Yeah.
And those partially vaccinated kids are vaccine injured kids too that are not at risk of, you know, spreading all these diseases because many of them have been vaccinated already.
Yeah.
Like we found out in high amounts, 50% and higher for things like polio and measles
yeah,
and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is data to show that the majority of people are questioning and are picking and choosing and that kind of stuff. That has nothing to do with the 1%.
Yeah.
The 1% is truly targeting the media's view of this, you know, this huge group of unvaccinated
right,
kids that does not exist and bringing attention to that.
Yeah.
But also, when you're having these conversations with people, your goal is not to get them to also question it and be, that's not your goal. That can't be your goal. Okay, like I think that's the wrong, for me personally, I think it's the wrong approach to go into a conversation with somebody thinking, I hope by the end of this, you want to join this movement too. I think that is way too lofty of a goal, and I think it's unrealistic. I think your first we're talking about basics here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your very first step should be at the end of a conversation, having somebody understand why you exist as an opposition.
Mm-hmm.
I've said this before.
Okay, I like
you
that.
You just
yeah,
want them to walk away going, Okay, so I sort of get why there are some people that are kind of having some questions.
Yeah, if they're going to join the movement, that's later.
That's later. That's
after they've looked into it.
That's later. I want them to just understand why we're going up to the Capitol and fighting these laws.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then after that first conversation, they're going and looking into some things. They see you as a human being, not as a crazy anti-vaxxer. That's already a huge success.
Right.
So when you get to that point, you go into more detail of some of these things, it's going to take a while for somebody to really understand more so that they can want to join things and question things too. So in your basic opening conversation with somebody, you're not going to get somebody to be like, unless they're already there, to say, where can I sign up for my next, you know, the next rally? And you don't want somebody to be jumping into something like that. You want them to just come to common ground with you mm-hmm. about like, did you know? Like I oftentimes I'll say, God, did you know that there are 69 doses for children on the schedule now? And people are just like, what? I'm like, I know. I thought that was crazy too when I find that out. I could leave at the end of that conversation, yeah. walk away, hey, have a good day. And then move on about my life, and I would still feel like I've made headway yeah. with somebody yeah. to have more understanding about why there's concern. She or he didn't necessarily go, well, I've got to fight back. I'm going to write to my legislator, tell you know, what group can I get involved in? But that's a lot to ask of somebody in one yeah. conversation.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm saying dispel the media myths. Dispel these things that keep coming out that make us look a certain way, portray a certain way, and make it seem like what we're thinking is this way over here. And we're trying to show them what we are thinking. We're thinking the schedule's too much. We're thinking that there are risk, guaranteed risk for yeah, some kids.
Yeah, yeah.
We're concerned that there's no liability, concerned that some kids' genetics are leaning towards potential risk. And there's such a small amount that are really unvaccinated. Herd immunity yeah. levels aren't even being threatened.
Yeah, so I can see in that simple level of the conversation, I can see that, you know.
Which we have about, to start
right,
with.
Right, yeah.
At
yeah.
the beginning.
I in deeper conversations, I suspect that more than 1% of America completely is not vaccinated, like totally opts out of vaccines. I suspect it's more than 1%. I mean, just based on the numbers of people we're seeing, you know, joining this movement, or more correctly, you would say who would now not vaccinate.
But that's different.
Right, you're right. That is different. Yeah. So I would love to, if we could somehow figure out.
Who are fully opting out now is different now. Than yeah, that are
right,
completely. Because
yeah.
my child yeah. has had 19 doses yeah. and I won't be giving her any more. So I'm opting out at this point, but she is absolutely not yeah, unvaccinated.
Yeah. yeah.
So I think a lot right, of people right, are in
yeah.
that boat.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I suspect the CDC is going to try to hide those numbers from
of
us.
Of course,
they don't want the public to know the high percentage of families that truly are now deciding to opt out of vaccines because of vaccine injury,
right? They're partially
or because
vaccinated.
Of education that they undertook you know, from the beginning. So, right. yeah, interesting. Yeah.
Okay. So those are my
yeah,
top five.
Thank you. So my top five. Some of it is very similar.
Sure.
I look at safety issues. Mm-hmm. I like to try to find common ground on safety and get to the person, kind of like you said, to acknowledge that vaccines do have some sort of risk and just side effects. And if it's the kind of conversation you're having like with someone where you're sitting down looking at stuff, I feel like that's where you basically have to have like a vaccine product insert. Again, this isn't like you're out at a rally conversation, but let's say this is a friend who you're talking to where they kind of ask you, yeah, what really is the big deal with this? To me, if you're gonna talk about safety and you have the opportunity, you pull out something like the MMR vaccine product insert, and you also say have like a Tylenol product insert. And you just say, yeah, just like you know, all medications have these, you know, side effects. Well, here's the measles vaccine that we all are giving everyone because of the measles outbreaks, et cetera. Well, they have this whole big, same long list of all these, you know, all these huge side effects, just like the Tylenol product insert does. You know, do you find that interesting? Is that, you know, and they see it like visually. Again, if you're in a scenario right. where you can have a visual, you know, a tool that you're using. I think people tend to trust product inserts, or to them it's like science, it's medicine. They know it's there. They know, you know, Tylenol, Motrin, you know, their blood pressure medication. It all has all these warnings. They can visually see that that kind of speaks to them, and to simply your conversation is basically. We know, like you said, every single, you know, pharmaceutical product has some, you know, potentially serious side effects. Myself being, you know, someone who's really in this movement, there's this great awareness that, you know, everyone's trying to downplay vaccine side effects. They're trying to ignore that they happen, pretend like they don't happen. And when they do happen, no one acknowledges it. You know, my friend, you know, his arm was paralyzed after a flu shot. You know, it's right here in the product insert. So when that happens, why does everyone try to pretend it doesn't? To get the person to basically agree that a vaccine can have a side effect, you know, I think you as a person in this movement kind of have to figure out, you know, how do you articulate that quickly and easily in a way that the person will at least understand that, yes, vaccines have side effects. And again, that was one of your points. But and I think, you know, getting the person to realize that, I think, is important in as, you know, simple way as you can, so they can walk away saying, oh, yeah. And you, if you're at a rally, if you're at a public place, say, yeah, that person over there, their child is in a wheelchair. You know, I know that person. I know that family. I've talked to them. They've told me that their child was not in a wheelchair, you know, got a round of vaccines and boom, their spine, you know, was paralyzed and now they're in a wheelchair. And gosh, wouldn't you know it, that side effect is listed on the product insert in very, you know, small print. If you have a visual to show someone, I think that's very telling. So they can, you know, walk away from that rally and you say, you know, no wonder they're here at this rally fighting mandates, right? Because they have that kind of child. So that's one thing. You know, I do like to touch on the expanding schedule. I don't think I'll go so much into that, but I think that is worth touching on. Something I like to touch on is talk about the original intention of vaccination versus what it is today. It sort of ties into the expanding schedule. Yeah, you know, we had a vaccine for smallpox, you know, and we had a vaccine, you know, we developed a vaccine for tetanus. Then we eventually developed a polio vaccine. We were trying to, you know, get rid of some really serious diseases and thank God we got, you know, we helped get rid of polio and smallpox is gone, and you don't have to go into all the, you know, the doubts about that. But you kind of sort of paint the original intention of vaccination. And I think the person would agree, yeah, I'm glad we had all those vaccines. Mm. And then you say, you know, but look at what we're doing today. You know, we have chickenpox vaccine. It's for chickenpox. We have, you know, sexually transmitted disease vaccines for newborns. We have a vaccine trying to prevent diarrhea. Do you get a flu shot? You know, I don't get a flu shot either. Now we have flu shots, you know.
But there's also a vaccine to quit smoking and things that are in development that are so ridiculous. I would even throw some of that in there, like, okay. As in they're making it for everything. There's one for the common cold that they're working on.
Yeah.
Like, these are things that you would say, this is how far it's gone.
Yeah.
To the extreme now that they're throwing it in for everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then maybe that's a good point, time to throw in. Yeah, like we used to give, eight injections or seven or eight injections to people in the 80s. Yeah, when you and I grew up, you know, did you know we only got like eight shots? Now we give 50 injections to people because of this expansion to not just vaccinate against what we should vaccinate against, but we're vaccinating against everything we can.
Yes. Yeah.
And so me as a consumer of healthcare, I would sort of ask myself the question, you know, just because we can vaccinate against it and a pharmaceutical company made a vaccine, does that mean we should? Mm-hmm. And I think the person's going to agree that, yeah, maybe if there's, you know, 16 vaccines to choose from, maybe I only want 14 of them. And then you say, then you tell the person, well, if there's a government like, board that says all 16 vaccines are so good for you, we really recommend you get them all, and we're encouraging your state legislators to mandate vaccines now, Does that concern you as a consumer? And again, if you have a government who's mandating, you know, six vaccines and two of those that you think are totally not important for your child, like hepatitis B and chickenpox, doesn't that piss you off that they're mandating, you know, ones that you don't want to get? And maybe you should, you know, want to step up and do something about that. I like to point out the long-term outcomes and the fact that we don't have vaccinated versus unvaccinated research. And it kind of ties into the expanding schedule and the fact that, you know, what we're doing today versus what we used to do. But just make sure the listener knows every aspect of medicine in our society has long-term outcome research, except for vaccination. Like they've done long-term outcome research on, you know, people with diabetes who get insulin, people with high blood pressure who take blood pressure medication, people with heart disease. You know, they do these, you know, 20, 30-year studies to make sure our medical policies are good for those people that are taking all those long-term medications. We have not done that on vaccines at all. And so you're thinking of, you know, giving a child 69 doses of something with no outcome research whatsoever. Mm-hmm. All you have is very quick, short, you know, short-term side effects. You don't know anything about the outcome. And does that, you know, concern you as a consumer of healthcare? And you know, hopefully it should. I like to touch on, I don't know if this is more than five, I like to ask people what they think about the motivation of people who are fighting mandates. Ask your listener, so why do you think this crowd of people is over here, you know, protesting these mandates? Mm-hmm. What's in it for them? They have everything to lose and Right. Nothing to gain. You know, their kids are kicked out of school. They're going to lose friends. They're going to lose family members because they're choosing not to vaccinate. They're now losing some rights. You know, some doctors lose their license or they lose their jobs, or people, you know, lose their jobs in hospitals for fighting against vaccines, vaccine mandates. Nobody makes money and gains stuff, in their life fighting this. So shouldn't that maybe make you pause, stop and pause? You know, what is it about these people that's making them do this? You know, they obviously think they're right. They feel like their child has already been injured. But someone with a pure motivation like that, where there's no financial motivation and they have everything to lose and nothing to gain, maybe that should make me listen to them a little bit more than I would someone who's protesting something else and they're going to gain a whole bunch of money if they win their argument, or gain a whole bunch if they win their argument.
Well, yeah. And compared to the industry that is funding the lobby is there to make laws, what do they stand to gain? So they are extremely well funded because they stand to gain guaranteed doses. And we're going to talk a little bit about this on an upcoming episode about Pfizer, a pharmaceutical giant. And as it relates to a vaccine that they make. But, you know, you have to think about, if you're going to mention, you know, like, what's the motivation behind these parents coming out with their children and trying to fight for basic human rights? You have to also bring into and then look at the motivation of a pharmaceutical company who manufactures something that they're trying to get mandated. Right. And they're the ones lobbying to these lawmakers to get the laws passed. Yeah. This is not some like consumer activism group that's trying to promote this for public health.
Right.
We're talking about pharmaceutical lobby is behind every single one of these new laws.
Right.
And so what is their motivation? We know people try to say there's no money in vaccines. Right. We know that's not true. We know that's not true.
Right.
And anytime you get something universally mandated or recommended or required or whatever, we're talking about at least 4 million kids a year on average who would be that cohort. There is money to be made there, and there is you know, there are monopolies on certain vaccines and things. Right. There are financial interests there. And when you compare that, which people all will agree that pharmaceutical companies are out of line with their, you know, profit greed and things that are profits over people, right? People can all agree on that. When they understand that compared to these, like you said, these handful of people that are out here protesting, it's easy to sort of see that there might be more to the story. And then again, that would be a follow-up conversation with them to understand why there are levels of corruption in this that we discuss as well.
Right. Right.
But yeah, I think that's a good one.
Right. And then it kind of ties into my main political point about this, to kind of expand a little bit on mandates mm-hmm. is you really want to paint the political picture of, again, the fact that many years ago in the 80s, Congress took liability away from vaccine side effects from the manufacturers, so manufacturers would no longer be liable. We know since then, pharma is the number one donator to Congress. All congressmen, for all these many, many decades, pharma has been their number one contributor by far. I believe, is that true? Are they bigger than big oil?
I think they're listed as, just if anything, right under, but very close.
Right. So they're the number one advertiser in media, mm-hmm. but maybe the number two political donation. I don't know. But all these years they've been donating to Congress, not because Congress gave them freedom from liability. I mean, those are two possibly independent, events. But, Congress took away their liability. So now all the vaccines they make are liability free. They've been donating to Congress. So now pharma and their lobbyists are asking Congress to mandate those liability free products. They're basically asking Congress to return the favor. We've been donating to you all these years. Could you please make our products mandatory for the American public? And that kind of crosses an extra line that I feel most people would agree is not okay to cross.
Mm-hmm.
It takes it to such a questionably ethical level that hopefully the listener would say, "Well, wait a minute. Well, I can see them taking away liability, and of course, pharma is going to donate to Congress because that's what all big companies do. But now Congress is going to force every American to have no choice about getting those products. That kind of feels a little, less comfortable to me as a consumer. And so right. I can see why you're fighting mandates just on that fact alone. So I think that's a good way to tie in the mandate part of the argument. So yeah, I like your list a little better because it's more simple.
Well, it's
so mine's kind of all over the place, but
mine is simple because I feel like you have to master your points.
Right.
And so
right.
one of the things I like about the Vax Facts postcards is like you have 3 points. You could literally spend a month or two on volume one and go, I'm going to master these 3 points that every conversation I have with somebody, I'm going to be very clear on these 3 points. The 3 points are that the schedule has risen. The second point is about no liability. And the third point is about mandates are taking away rights and discriminating against, already injured and at-risk kids. So again, on the back of each of these things, there's explanation. So if you memorize that and you get really well-versed in just the elevator speech version of each of those 3 points, and you feel super confident, you make your goal for month one and two for that volume of that Vax Facts. I'm going to keep putting out new volumes. That volume, you make it your goal to have a conversation with everybody and master the basics of that. You will make a lot of headway because, mm-hmm. To be honest, you're not going to necessarily get repeat conversations with a lot of people. And that right. doesn't mean that they're not going and finding out more things right. and looking into right. it, and maybe changing their own belief system and having more tolerance. But it might mean they're not going to come back to you and say, okay, tell me more about this corruption in the CDC, right?
Right.
So if you are going to leave somebody with something, you want to leave them with something that they can repeat, they can understand, and they could pass along to somebody else. And that has to be extremely simple.
Think about the
other side, right? Think about the bullet points and the media sound bites that we keep hearing. They are the most simple and basic things over and over and over. And I laugh about this and I've said it a couple times this week to different people. But you've got doctors and medical professionals saying the most watered down, vague, basic mm-hmm. things
yeah.
that don't even particularly make them sound that educated. They don't go into details and studies and anything. They literally just go, research has shown. Vaccines don't cause autism. They're safe and effective. Everybody needs to get vaccinated. They're safe.
And effective.
And effective. And everybody needs to get them. And laws are protecting immunocompromised and those who are too young to be vaccinated. Right. They don't actually, do you ever see these doctors go, well, you know, speaking of aluminum, I've got five studies right here that show that X, Y, and Z. No, they don't go into that. They don't go into that because the average American is not, you know, capable of sucking in all this information and really taking it in. And they know that. And they are part of the PR machine. The PR machine is dumb it down to the most simple, simple things. And even as a doctor, these people come across as not really particularly educated. I mean, some in our own state don't come across as that educated when they go to talk about their own area of supposed expertise. And it's all by design. Well, in some cases, because they're really not educated, but they're not really experts on the thing that they claim to be experts about. But oftentimes, this is all by design. Simple is by design. So they are dumbing this down and they are repeating these things over and over because there's data that shows if you hear something X number of times, you will remember it. So I think that as a movement, we need to be really careful to master the basics. Now, in your case, it's different because obviously if somebody follows up with you, you've got all sorts of, you know, you're one of the few medical professionals even in the nation that are as well-versed on this topic because it's your specialty at this point. And most doctors are not as well-versed as you on vaccines. So you could talk to anybody, almost anybody about almost anything on this, and you would have that ready. The average parent in this has a little bit of knowledge on lots of things and a lot of knowledge on a few things. And depending on the severity of their own child's vaccine injury, they have extreme knowledge on certain medical areas as well. But I think if we can master, and I mean master forward and backward, feel super comfortable with just three basic facts at a time, and we can make sure we have that conversation with everybody we know, that conversation with everybody we know, that conversation with everybody we know, that we will feel confident. And then you start to add a few more to that. And you start with simple because that is the audience that we're dealing with. Right. Remember, we're living in this world. So for us, simple seems like boring or you're not really like impressing people. But the truth is, for everybody else, this is the first time they may be hearing any of this. And so you have to think about people from where they're coming from. And you have to keep it so, so simple that you're just looking for a teeny tiny shift, a teeny tiny shift. Because if you have enough of that with enough people, that's going to equate to a large shift. And it's exactly what the other side has done, and they've done so successfully. And they just assume people are so ignorant, they're not going to know any better. And there's nobody else that's countering that. So we have to be the counter, and we have to do it in the same way that is as effective, which is to be simple, be clear, be articulate, and make sure we really know inside and out the things we're talking about. Because I've heard people who I know aren't super, don't have a very deep well of knowledge on a topic, bring up something on that topic. And the problem is if they're going to be talking to somebody who's a pediatrician or somebody who's a biochemist who has a follow-up question, they're not going to be able to answer it. And so it's really better if we keep the level of conversation for this shift we're talking about for the public education, we keep it at a certain level of simplicity where we can all agree to agree on these things. Let's just talk about this stuff. As you go into, we know the data's there on a deeper level. Unfortunately, hitting people with that, it just goes over their heads. And the other side's not doing it because they just trust if the CDC says it's good, they've already done the science. So nobody's really putting out the data on the other sides. They just give you the bullet points.
The other side, not at all, is providing any scientific arguments.
And they don't have
to.
Because their marketing machine is so strong that they just do the advertising lines. So that's kind of, I think, the way that we need to look at it when we're having a basic conversation, because that is what it's effective. And we have to be fair to people. This is what they need from us, is they need simplicity. Because again, for many people, this is going to be like a, okay, well, what you're telling me is like completely different than what I spent the last 50 years believing. And that's a lot for somebody to take in at one time. So, you know, we kind of have to be compassionate and considerate to somebody.
And one of my main points, that's not a point, but it's more of a tactic or an idea for people to know, is you really, really have to understand your listener. And you have to get to know them a little bit before you embark on your your discussion.
And be gentle with people.
Right. But what you have to realize, if you are talking to a parent who has already fully vaccinated their child and you start throwing all this at them.
Definitely.
You're essentially telling them that they were a bad parent for vaccinating their child.
They made bad decisions. They put their child at risk.
If you make them feel that way, they, in order for them to avoid the guilt of
or embarrassment.
Right. They have to get defensive.
Right.
Their mind has to shut down. They have to tell themselves, no, vaccinating was the right choice. I'm glad I vaccinated my kid. Because if they even begin to think of the idea that, oh my gosh, could my kid's asthma have been caused by the vaccines? Right. Or my kid has ADD. Oh my gosh, did I cause that? Is it my fault my child has a chronic disease?
Right.
That's a lot of guilt to deal with. Now, they might get there eventually.
Yeah.
And realize it eventually.
But it has to be on their timetable.
Right, right.
And they need to be the one leading it.
Right. So you can't just say all this right at the beginning if you were talking to a parent who has older kids that they've already vaccinated their kids.
Or
middle-aged kids, you know, who are kind of already vaccinated their kids. If you're talking to a parent like that, in that situation, you have to really go easy and figure out how to approach this in a way that'll get them thinking of things without thinking that the vaccines are all dangerous and are, you know, hurt all these kids. So, I mean, I don't know exactly how you go about that, but you need to, I think, tread lightly and ask them. You need to find out what they think about this and kind of say, yeah, your kids are five. So yeah, you've probably put them through all the vaccines and through the conversation, you find out that their kids are healthy and they seem fine. And you say, gosh, you're so fortunate, that your kids are healthy. And, my friend over here, she gave her kid all their vaccines and her kids are fine also. But my other friend over here, on their third round of vaccines, their kid had a seizure and seemed to suffer some sort of brain injury. And it's, it was so tragic. And so, we're so fortunate that our kids weren't injured, but gosh, their child was. So I'm here to kind of support them and talk about, why these rare injuries happen and
why it's not fair that that child gets kicked out of school.
Right, right, right. And so you need to bring people in who have already vaccinated in a way that doesn't make them angry and guilty and defensive against you. I feel like you need to identify with a person a little bit before you start. You can't just start attacking them or come down, come against everything they stand for. You have to find a way to identify with them.
Well, I
if you're going
to
pull them into the conversation.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody's talking, I know that's the person you're talking about is like a super, they definitely fully vaccinated all their kids and they're really on board with that. I'd be like, well, not everybody has a reaction, but because everybody's body is different, some kids do. Now there's genetic risk that makes, some kids have, I mean, my kid did, but your kid didn't. It's like, but we know it's happening to some kids. Yeah. So what do we do with that? Like, and it's a very, we just came to the same, like, hey, it happens to some. It doesn't happen to everybody. Like, I'm acknowledging it doesn't happen to everybody.
Or another way is, I had a friend who, they have four kids and they, their first three kids seemed to do fine. You can use the same.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Seemed to do fine with all the vaccines. But oh my gosh, when, their fourth kid, they suffered a very severe vaccine reaction. So there were, and so I think a parent who's fully vaccinated their kids, they're going to think, well, thank God my kids did okay.
Right, right.
But maybe now I can listen to this person.
Yeah.
Because my kids did okay. They vaccinated some of their kids, but then something bad happened. Let me find out about that.
But thank God
my kids are okay. You need to kind of let them have that safety space at the beginning of this conversation. And if they're going to get there later in a different way, then that's, that.
But it comes down to what your intention is.
Right, yeah.
Your intention is not to convince them to believe what you want to believe.
No, but to bring them in.
Your intention is just to say hey, I'm just letting you know this is the other kind of the side of it. I know that you didn't, that wasn't your personal experience. It was mine. And sometimes it happens, but we can all agree that X, Y, and Z, your experience. This is mine, but we can all agree this. You're not trying to convince them. If you're coming at them in a combative way of well, you fully vaccinated your kid and that asthma is probably because of your vaccines.
Oh,
and
totally.
You're not going to be accusatory to somebody because because you don't know all the details.
So I just need
there.
To remind people about that.
No,
I,
it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you have to be careful of that mindset. That
but
that
that's because people are trying to convince them. Yeah. Like, my goal at the end of this conversation is to get you to agree with me. That's not your goal. Yeah. You don't need people to agree with you. You just need people to recognize you and to understand why you're there and you're coming to that common ground. And if you think of it that way, your conversation will be totally different with somebody. And when they are open and willing and wanting more, then you're welcome and excited, I'm sure, to be able to go into more details on that. And of course, we want people to join against these types of mandates for medical interventions. Right. Of course we want that, but we're not recruiting people. We're just trying to get some common ground and compassion and understanding.
Yeah.
You know,
you have to really be careful though. I think you have to almost assume anyone who's coming by or isn't part of that event or doesn't even know this,
I would.
You got to assume that they fully vaccinated their kids. They feel very good about it. And you have to, I guess.
And they maybe don't understand what these people are.
So that's our goal, is to get them to understand.
Right.
And so you have to be careful that the right messaging is presented.
Again, if you're looking for those Vax Facts postcards, message me. If you're wondering, I'm mentioning them and you're wondering where to get them, message me on Facebook. You cannot comment on my things if you are not a friend or a friend of a friend, because there are some aggressive and awful people in the world, and I keep those to a minimum on my social media experience. So if you cannot reach me there, then just message our Immunity Education Facebook page so that you have tools to have these conversations with basic facts that you can master these 3 points and really have these good conversations. Anyway, again, yes, thank you for joining us.
That was fun. Thank you for your insight.
Bye.
The information in this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as medical advice. Always consult your healthcare professional for information on vaccines and infectious diseases.